This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Malaysia is set to become an aging population very soon, which means that people aged 65 years and above will become a significant part of society. But how healthy will they be? That's the most important part, because if we are unwell at the older age, that's going to be a significant burden for society. So we are now looking at the results of the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2018, which focused on elderly health, to get some insights. And to share those results with us today are Dr. Rajini Suriana Rayana, Public Health Specialist from the Institute for Public Health and Ministry of Health, as well as Dr. Yao Wing Kiong, National Head of Geriatric Services from the Ministry of Health, to share insights about the impact of these findings and how it will inform policies and services for geriatric health in Malaysia. Good afternoon, Dr. Rajini and Dr. Yao. How are both of you today?
Good. Good afternoon.
Okay. Before we get into the survey itself, it will be good to be able to take a broad look. What does the aging population in Malaysia currently look like, Dr. Yao?
Okay. The current aging population, we know, there's about 30 million plus population in Malaysia, and then the older people is about 10% of them are 60 and above. And of course, these older people range from very healthy, for instance, Tun Mahathir and those group who are very healthy, both physically, mentally, to the other end where they needed to be warded in the hospitals. And I cover the other spectrum, usually probably 10-20% of those who turn ill and get admitted to hospital. I think for Malaysia, we should look into the healthy group of people. So I guess our studies will be very relevant to Malaysia, which is now moving towards an aging, we are in aging society, moves towards age society soon.
But what proportion of the aging, of the older population now, is considered healthy, and what proportion is unhealthy?
The healthy part, I think, in general, I used to think those who get admitted to us is maybe 30-40%, right? But the recently, a few years ago, when we had our paper to the ministry, in the population, there's only about 6-7% older people then. But the ward, medical ward, about 20%. So about three times. Now we have about 10% of the populations who are older, 60 and above. But about 40% are the older people, and some places 50%. So there's quite a lot are coming to the hospital. And how healthy are they in the community? That's the part that we have to do studies to look at the burden, and that's where Dr. Ranjini comes in.
That's what the survey is looking
about,
at,
yes.
And the state.
Where we stand in terms of our aging population. Okay, we first of all have to understand that we are a rapidly aging population. Okay, from the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000 onwards, you see that the growth of the older population was very minimal back then. From about 2000 onwards, then you see from the 90s onwards, you see a rapid surge in the increase in the aging population, those aged 60, 65 compared to before, 10 years before. You see the incremental change is much higher compared to before. Mm-hmm. And this is very much so compared to the general population, where no doubt the population of Malaysia is increasing from 20 million in the 80s to 22 million to 28 million 10 years ago, and now it's 32.4 million. It is an increase, but the incremental change is much less compared to the older population in Malaysia. Yeah. So that's why we need to prepare for aging process to occur. And how many are healthy, unhealthy? So that's why we need to find out for the first time, the very first nationwide aging survey to be done, to examine what is happening on the ground.
And looking ahead, just projecting how the aging population is going to grow even more by year 2020, which is only next year.
Correct.
We will be an aged nation already, with over 65s making up 14% of the population. And I also hear this new term, the super aged nation, mm-hmm. by the year 2030, which is the over 65s making up 20% of the population. What is the impact of this on our society?
Okay. As you mentioned just now, by 2020, we'll probably be an aging society with 10% of its population, 60 and above. By 2035, we'll be an aged society of about 14%. So that is going to be a lot of people. Like, as I told you, on the ground, there's about 10%. But in our ward, there's about 40%. So we have to get ready with how to handle them. And so we need to get them to be very healthy, to manage themselves so that they don't come to the hospital, because hospital stay is expensive, a lot of funding needed, a lot of staff needed. So primary care on how to get them healthy, get them proper lifestyle, screen those diseases which, not so obvious, mm-hmm. to be picked up quickly so that we can treat them before they reach a point where they need to get admitted. So those are the things that we should be looking at, how primary care can really quickly deal with maybe probably 90% of those patients who may not need to come to hospital. So that is the focus we should really move towards.
Okay. But Dr. Rajini, who are our elderly in terms of the breakdown of demographics? Can you describe what the elderly population looks like?
Okay. From our survey last year, where we covered 7,900 plus respondents, of whom 3,977 are elderly. When I say elderly, I mean those aged 60 and above. No doubt, internationally, we use 65 and above. But for Malaysian purposes, for policies, we recognise the age of 60 as a senior person or warga emas in Malaysia. So looking at those 60 and above, we see that there's a slight feminization of the population, where you can see a slight increase in females compared to males. This is for those aged 60 to 69 or young elderly. We have 36.9 males and 35% females, just a 1% difference. When they're 70 to 79, you can already see there's a slightly higher increase in females, 15.6 compared to 15.4. And in the oldest old, 80 and above, 4.7 females compared to 4% males. So there's a slight increase in females. The longevity is there, yeah? Mm. Okay, that's in terms of gender. In terms of ethnicity, yeah, majority are Bumiputra Malay, followed by Chinese, Indian, other Bumis, and then others. In terms of
geographical distribution, are they mostly in urban or rural areas?
Okay, the way we sampled respondents was we oversample those in rural areas to ensure we had a good response rate from them, because we know it's going to be harder to find certain elderly. So that's why we actually had 57% rural compared to 42% urban for females and males. But that was the way we did the survey. Yeah.
All right. So this may not necessarily be representative.
Correct. Yeah, in terms of marital status, 1/3 are actually single. When I say single, they're actually never married or widowed or divorced or separated, compared to 2/3 who are married. But this does not mean that they are alone, as only 6.3% of them actually live alone. So this means that although they are single, they may actually have other sources of support available to them.
Would this include the elderly who live in nursing homes?
No. Mm. When we did the survey, we were very specific. We only went to those living in houses because we know that 95% or more of the Malaysian population actually resides on their own, and a very small percentage is institutionalized. So we did not include old folks' homes. Mm. It was purely those living in their own homes or, with their family.
Okay. Yeah. What about employment? I'm quite interested in that.
Okay. So in terms of employment, we see that, so we have a quarter of older persons, this is 26%, who are actually employed compared to those who are unemployed. When I say unemployed, it could be they are a retiree, either from government or private sector. They could be a pensioner, homemaker, or unemployed. Okay, so from those working, this could be in the civil sector, the private sector, self-employed, or semi-government. Okay, so the majority were self-employed. Okay, and by age breakdown, 60 to 69 or young elderly, almost 8 in 10, 78% are employed. compared to those 70 to 79, 20% are still employed. And those 80 and above, 2.1% are actually still employed.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Dr. Yao, I think this question is for you. What do you think are our challenges in addressing the needs of the elderly population? I mean, we know that we need to be preparing them to be well, to be healthy, to live these longer years.
Yes.
But in terms of challenges in reaching them or in providing the services to them, what would those be?
So this is, to me, is a very challenging issue. I mean, I have to talk from this perspective because I see them in the hospital. So our hospitals are mainly run acutely. So that means they get admitted to the hospital, they get managed, they get treated, they get rehabilitated to a certain point, and they get discharged. That usually cater for a lot of quite healthy adults rather than the older people. And when they get discharged, there's this primary care who continue follow-up or they come to hospital follow-up. But for the older people, they, as I mentioned just now, it's a whole spectrum of them. So they have people who are healthy. That's quite easy. They get settled, they get home. The other group, in between, we can try and rehabilitate them. There are some ways we can get them back on their feet and they can go back to the community. But, you know, older people, we need to know the baseline. They drop from one level to another level. And when they go back, they never go back to before. So it's a slow decline for a lot of older people. So when they go back, we maintain them in our clinics, our follow-ups. But the last group is a group that when they drop, they really drop to the point that they need care. And the care can come from family. You know, Ranjini mentioned that very few live alone. A lot of them are with family, especially in the rural area. But in big towns, this is a problem. Most people have to work, you know, cost of living is difficult. So getting them to stop work, to take care of the close one, who need a lot of help, is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so one way is to homes. But there's not many homes available that's run by government where standard are good, structure are proper, staffing are adequate. So this is the whole spectrum of people. So our challenge is in the hospital, we don't have enough such experts.
Mm-hmm.
Handling older people is quite tedious because they are so complicated. There are so many diseases, they have psychological thing. They've been living for so long. There's so many risks which is going on. There are family issues and so on. So you can't be a single physician like a cardiologist or gastro where you tackle one system only. So you need a team. And to form this team in a setup which is meant for acute, is so difficult.
Mm.
And to get people to join us to be geriatrician is, again, not so easy. I'm sure you have chance
have
to talk to other geriatricians.
We've heard of this challenge, yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So you see, I've handled a person who's demented, you know. So I need to get a lot of things to say this person's dementia, they must fulfill certain criteria. So getting those information in a person who cannot tell you is quite challenging. It can run in hours, you know. And when they have behavior, we change to a counseling mode. And that took us a long time. It becomes 2 hours or so to solve one behavior. So, you know, if you see such patient in private, you're not going to earn a lot. That's the fact. A lot of people won't join us, you know. So you need the leader, you need the structure, you need a facility and so on. So those are the challenge. And most of us have to handle general medical. So a portion of the time gone. Like I'm handling a big department, 500 bedded, 1,000 staff, about 50 pakas. I have to juggle them so that they function properly.
Mm.
Now I have to take care of the elderly too. So those are the difficulty, challenges we have.
Mm.
Yeah, for me.
Okay.
And of course, I hope the primary care can really take care of the older so that they don't get admitted to the hospital.
Mm. We're talking about the results of the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2018 today. This survey focused on elderly health specifically. So we're looking at what were some of the findings and what were the recommendations as well from the group that did the survey. So when we come back from this quick break, we'll continue that conversation. In the studio with me today is Dr. Rajini Suryana Rayana, Public Health Specialist from the Institute for Public Health, as well as Dr. Yao Wing Kiong, National Head of Geriatric Services, both from the Ministry of Health. Stay tuned, we'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Yi. In the studio with me today, Dr. Rajini Suryanarayana, Public Health Specialist from the Institute for Public Health in the Ministry of Health, as well as Dr. Yao Wing Kiong, National Head of Geriatric Services, also from the Ministry of Health. We're looking at the findings of the National Health and Morbidity Survey from 2018, last year, which looked specifically at elderly health issues. And this survey, the results were just released very recently. So we're looking at the breakdown of its findings and also what is its impact and how it can help to inform policies and services moving forward. Dr. Rajini, why was there a need for NHMS to focus specifically on the elderly population? What kind of gaps were you seeking to fill?
Okay, we can't deny that we are an aging population, and with aging, there are multiple challenges to the health, social, and welfare system in the country. So, which is why when we put together this survey, we didn't just take into the opinion of like what we as researchers want. We also invited those in charge of the Family Health Development Division, the primary care services in the country, the geriatricians, academicians, researchers, and clinical practitioners from various expertise to contribute towards the survey. Yeah? So looking at the main findings of the survey, we found that while the majority of our population, we know that they reside within the community, and we actually found 6.3 of them to be living alone. We also found out that less than 5% of them actually use public transport to access healthcare facilities. That means the majority of them use private transport, either their own or someone else's relatives, a friend. Okay. When we asked older persons these questions, we ensured that the questionnaires we used were validated for our local population. This is very important, mm-hmm. yeah? So that the findings are valid, reliable, and they can be extrapolated to our Malaysian population. Okay, looking at geriatric syndromes or conditions that are common with aging, mm-hmm. we see that in terms of mental health, 8.5% or almost 1 in 10 screen positive for dementia, while 5.3% screen positive for depressive symptoms. Mm. So dementia is a chronic degenerative disease that leads to deterioration in memory, impaired thinking, difficulty in comprehension, changes in behavior, and loss of ability to perform everyday activities. And this deterioration is actually one of the major causes of disability among the elderly. Mm. So this is good to know that, you know, 1 in 10 actually have this problem. Yeah. We also asked about functional limitation in terms of activities of daily living, covering 10 basic activities that you or I may do on a daily basis, such as climbing stairs, control over your bladder or bowel, transferring in and out of a chair, your mobility, the ability to use a toilet, to feed yourself, to dress yourself, things that which we don't think about. But actually 1 in 6 or 17% of elderly have a problem in this. They are dependent on someone else for these activities of daily living.
So yeah? these you would say are markers for the ability to be independent.
Yes, correct. Okay. And in terms of instrumental activities of daily living, these are a little bit more complex, such as shopping, preparing food, doing your laundry, being able to use transport or handle your own medication or finances. You have 42.9% of elderly who are dependent on someone else for this. Yeah. For disability, 4.5% have self-reported vision disabilities, 6.4% have self-reported hearing disabilities. Almost 15% of elderly had sustained a fall in the past 12 months. 3% suffered from urinary incontinence. Okay. Then when we asked them about physical activity, I'm glad to say that 7 in 10 mm-hmm. are physically active, mm-hmm. performing moderate and vigorous activities according to predefined criteria that we used, while 23% displayed sedentary behavior. This is sitting or lying down for more than 8 hours a day, excluding sleeping. So this is not good. Yeah. Mm. And you can actually have someone who's sedentary and physically active. You know that you're in an office job, you go back home, you ensure you exercise on a treadmill, you go jogging, whatever it is. Yeah. But you have 1 in 5 elderly who are highly sedentary and physically inactive at the same time. Mm. Okay. We looked at, like I mentioned just now, it's not just health, it's also social aspects that influence a person's well-being overall. Okay, so we asked about social support, about quality of life. Social support in terms of number of persons they are in contact with in their social network and the number of times they hear or see from them, mm-hmm. okay, as well as their perceived satisfaction with this network. 1/3 of elderly reported poor social support. For quality of life, when we looked at control over their lives, the autonomy they have in their daily lives, their self-realization and pleasure derived from their daily activities. Again, 1/3 of elderly reported experiencing poor quality of life.
Do you find this contradictory with our societal values? We pride ourselves on being... you know, on having filial piety. Yes, of being close-knit communities. But 1/3 of the elderly feeling this way and reporting this kind of state of living is quite alarming, wouldn't you say?
Yes,
exactly. Okay. So this is something that if we do not ask, we will not know. Okay, things like abuse, we think that it doesn't happen in our society. We are Malaysians, we are Asians, we respect our elders, yes. But sometimes directly, indirectly, things happen. And unless you ask a person in detail, you sit down with them, you visit them in their house, you know, it's just like a teh tarik session at a coffee shop. And you tell them that you'd like to ask them certain questions and, you know, then you get to know that these things actually happen.
Okay. Yeah. And speaking of elder abuse, you looked at that
in
the survey as well.
So 9% of elderly, or 1 in 10, reported experiencing elder abuse at the hands of someone known to them in the past 12 months, where elder abuse is defined as a single or repeated act or lack of appropriate action occurring whenever there is an expectation of trust that causes harm or distress to an older person. So you see, this would therefore include any incidents of neglect, psychological abuse, physical abuse, financial exploitation, as well as sexual abuse in the past 12 months. Okay, and this has to be by someone known to them. So it's not a stranger. It's not a crime. Yeah, it's someone known to them, usually their family, caregiver. And in our context, neglect was the most common experience, comprising lack of cooked food, lack of clean clothes, shelter or medication. Okay. Besides that, we also looked at nutrition, NCDs or non-communicable diseases. So in terms of nutritional status and dietary practices, 5% of elderly are underweight when classified according to their BMI, their body mass index, while 17.6% are obese. Okay. Besides that, 1 in 10 or 10.5% of elderly have muscle wasting, using their calf circumference and as an accepted measure of muscle wasting specific to the elderly. It was not just questions, we also did a few measurements. Yeah. A further 30% of elderly are reported to be malnourished or at risk of malnutrition when asked about decline in food intake, weight loss over the past 3 months, how they describe their mobility, any stress or severe illness experienced in the past 3 months, as well as having their muscle wasting taken into account. Okay. We also examined food security, where 1 in 10 elderly were found to experience food insecurity on a daily basis when asked whether the food they bought was enough or having to skip meals because there just wasn't enough money for food, not being able to afford to eat balanced meals or being hungry in the past 12 months. Yeah.
Can I quickly touch on the 30% of them facing malnutrition? Dr. Yao, is this in line with what you see in the clinical setting?
This is something which we've been thinking about, thought about, you know, trying to settle and overcome it.
What is the end point that you see them? You know, what are they suffering
from? So when they're malnourished, when they come to us, they will have some aspect of the malnutrition. So muscle will be wasted. And if you've seen, in places where they are malnourished, the kids who are malnourished are actually miserable. They look sad. They don't look good. And those who have overeaten are jolly happy, you know. So our patients who come to us have this problem. So if they have an illness, to recover back from illness with malnutrition, the immunity will be poorer. And you want to rehab them with muscle wasting, you have difficulty pushing them back to get back to walking and so on and so forth. So actually, malnutrition is also related to other things, you know, to a concept called frailty. When they're frail, their risk of getting into crisis is higher. Risk of getting into falls is higher. The risk of getting confused is higher, especially the brain is a bit frail. Huh? Say you are a bit cognitively out. You tend not to eat so well. And so those are all interconnected. And when they get admitted to ward, the chances of us getting back out to the community is problematic and they clog our bed in that way. And sometimes they come back again, and after we send them, they come back again because support is not good. Because if you're not eating well, probably financial is an issue, social support is an issue.
It ties back to their food security, you're looking at their social support as well.
Correct.
Because then, when you discharge them from the ward, they've got to go back to the community.
Correct.
And if things don't improve within the community.
So that's a cascade, you know, a cascade which you have to break somewhere.
Mm.
And we already find quite a lot of things. Like we suspect, you know, because we don't have statistics, we don't have data. We only can say that in the hospital, we see this. Can we do something? In fact, before NHMS, we've been pestering. Prior to this, I think the previous, I think one of the, were asking, can we look back at the previous survey and see how much and what's the problem? You know, we could only go back old data, but they're very minimal because they're not focused, not specific. So this is really good data for us to plan and to do something about it.
I mean, on that note, what will we need at the community level? Because you can't be taking care of them at the acute stage in hospital all the time.
Yes.
What you need is good services to ensure that they are well taken care of at the community level.
So at the community level, the persons, because their problems are not so complicated yet. No? So for instance, just now we talked about 8.5% dementia. We pick them up, you know, and you start planning for them, you can do a bit more. Say if they are early stage of dementia, they want to drive, you can actually follow them, you know, and we can assess them. If they are capable, we will allow them to drive on a normal day, short distance with somebody following. But if you don't pick it up and they get worse and worse and they continue to drive, they may cause accidents and so on. And that may cause problems. So, or for instance, we say they're depressed and we know there's about 30%+ poor quality of life, poor social support. I mean, getting depressed will be related. And they're depressed. You pick them up early, if they're not so bad, you can actually do something about it. Counsel them and get family support. About 70%+ of depression can be managed. But if it's more severe, you can give them medication. Or we know they're malnourished. You can actually pick him up. You know, you can screen them easily by getting a few questionnaires and just doing simple measurements, and you pick them up. And you can start, okay, these people who are malnourished, you target them for some supplements of nutrition. So those, instead of giving blanket, you know, we say they are poor, give them blanket thing. You must have selected people who need, you give it. So if you have very good primary care service, and we can pick up problems, and you have connection with other agencies who can also help. Ministry of Health is standing alone, so maybe a bit difficult. And so if it other agency, and when they pick up person who they cannot cope, they can refer to us early. I think we can do something about that. So that connection with community and hospital and other agency is a must be there.
Who would these other agencies include?
For instance, the social welfare, who can actually provide. NGOs, you know, say they go back to community. If we can link up with the every kampung have a JKKK, Jabatan Kuasa Kesihatan Keluarga in the, and that committee, say we discharge this person back to community and we inform them. They can actually look into, sometimes they just need somebody go in and have a look, sometimes bring in food, you know, and so on. So these are things which at the moment, not there, but can be worked up, you know. And of course, we are quite good in coordinating. There's this number of geriatricians too little to do it. And of course, we also hope family medicine specialists, public health specialists could actually join in that we do have a problem, you know. Not many, I don't think so. There's many family medicine specialists who are interested in elderly. Yeah, as I say, when you go private, not much of. So those are the issues.
Maybe I can add on to Dr. Yao. Okay, so preventive measures, basically, it starts from the person themselves. Okay, so being aware about what aging entails and common issues or challenges that we just highlighted faced by our Malaysian elderly would help ensure that they can prepare for aging. Okay, raising awareness of the community themselves about these issues early is definitely empowering themselves for their own health, be it the elderly person themselves, the caregiver, the family, the community, the health and social care providers, and other related agencies. And when I say other related agencies, maybe I can touch on that. So I know the Institute for Public Health has been mandated to conduct the NHMS. This actually comes from the steering committee of the NHMS, chaired by Yang Bahagia Datuk, the Director General of Health himself. Okay, and we are led by our advisor, is our director for the Institute for Public Health, Dr. Haji Tahir bin Aris. With all his experience, he puts together this. And when I said we invited other agencies to be involved with us in this survey from the beginning, so that's how it all started for the aging survey. The inception involved the other agencies. Yes. So we had those from the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development, the Department of Social Welfare, also on our team. So when we finished the survey, we presented the findings to all of them at Institute for Public Health first, before we consolidated them and put forth the findings and recommendations to the steering committee of the MOH chaired by DG, as well as the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development. We also presented these findings there at the National Advisory and Consultative Council for Older Persons. This was fairly recently, 27 June this year. Okay, and the council agreed with the findings, and they actually suggested the formulation of a specific law for older persons, which is wonderful if we want to prepare for an aging societies. And if these findings can actually help refine the national older persons policy, that's actually great. Okay, so you see, we have the various ministries working in unison. We have the secretariat, the Department for Social Welfare, who puts together these policies. Okay. Now, prior to 1995, there was actually no specific policy for older persons in Malaysia. Health and social concerns came under the purview of the National Social Welfare Policy, where families played the primary role in the care of older persons based on our very Malaysian value, filial piety, respecting your oldest. Okay, so this is important, yes. A more comprehensive and holistic plan came later when the National Policy for the Elderly was formulated in 1995. And an action plan was formulated. We have the National Plan of Action for Healthcare of Older Persons, run by the Ministry of Health. And the National Health Policy for Older Persons was established further to that in 2012, where its implementation is overseen by this council.
What are the recommendations that you put forth?
Okay, so we have three main categories. Okay, so we recognize that multiple agencies are essential to be involved to achieve successful aging or healthy aging. Yeah, from the health side, we have public health physicians, geriatricians, clinicians, researchers, program managers, and policymakers in the MOH. So firstly, we want to ensure that older persons are made to feel a part of society holistically. And one of this is by ensuring that we have the physical infrastructure in place for services to be elderly friendly. Okay, so we'd like to suggest for elder friendly townships with homes designed for elder friendly features. As I mentioned just now, okay, stair climbing, mobility, being able to groom yourself, feed yourself. These are things where they have problems with. Okay, so enforcing guidelines for elder friendly housing design would be important. Okay, so taking this a step forward, why not have a UTC, your Urban Transformation Centre, to be a one-stop centre, not just for you to do your passport or register something, but you can make this a focal point where they can network with each other, talk to each other, perform various activities together. And if this leads to, you know, income generation on the side, why not? Okay, so besides the physical infrastructure, social environment is very important. Community empowerment programs that provide avenues for the elderly to be in touch with each other, with the local communities, are very important. So this could be via strengthening the older persons club. We have something called the Club Warga Emas in the various primary health centres in the community. There are 294 such older persons club currently. This is by the Ministry of Health, okay? The Ministry of Department of Social Welfare has the PAWE, Pusat Activity Warga Emas, or Senior Activity Centre. So there's 88 right now, and they're also expanding and building 35 such community centres, yeah? Okay, so that was in terms of infrastructure, be it physical or social. Secondly, we'd like to propose for incentives for caregivers of elderly. This could be via flexible working hours, tax rebates, respite care, to alleviate some of the burden through them. This could be a public-private partnership, okay, not just focusing on the ministries alone, or utilising manpower of elderly themselves. Use the young elderly to take care of the older elderly. Okay, you know, NGOs or private companies who want to provide services for the elderly. This could be a tax exemption for startup companies providing such care. Okay, and thirdly, in terms of elderly protection, elder abuse and neglect should be emphasized by creating awareness on the rights of elders and the issue of elder abuse. So training on elder abuse and its management is important for frontline care providers, medical officers, social care workers, informal caregivers. Guidelines on detection and management should be in place, as well as a necessary referral pathway. What do you do with someone like that? You know, is there an SOP in place? Whom can I call? Whom should I refer to? And an Elder Act, which is all-encompassing, should be in place to protect the rights of the elderly.
We're talking about the results of the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2018 today. This survey focused on elderly health specifically. So we're looking at what were some of the findings and what were the recommendations as well from the group that did the survey. So when we come back from this quick break, we'll continue that conversation. In the studio with me today is Dr. Rajini Suryana Rayana, Public Health Specialist from the Institute for Public Health, as well as Dr. Yao Wing Kiong, National Head of Geriatric Services, both from the Ministry of Health. Stay tuned, we'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Ik. In the studio with me, Dr. Yao Wing Kiong, National Head of Geriatric Services from the Ministry of Health, as well as Dr. Rajini Suryana Rayana, Public Health Specialist from the Institute for Public Health. Dr. Rajini is also the Principal Investigator for the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2018, which looked specifically at elderly health, and we are discussing some of their findings and recommendations today. Dr. Yao, looking at these recommendations, what would be the priorities at your level, you know, considering your position as the national the head of National Geriatric Services?
Okay, for me, when they come to me, I need to make sure when they come at what level they are, they go back. I will have to get them back. Crisis came and they drop their ability, your ADL drop to a certain percentage, we have to push back to before. So for that, I need a team to really get them to be as good as before. So only in very few places in the whole Malaysia, we have a complete sort of team. Most of the states have a team without wards, without the other team members to them. So they are still struggling, you know, to try and settle the older people without a proper team. I mean, KL, I'm quite okay. We have one ward, and then we are planning to get another acute ward. Being the head of the department, I have the privilege to sort of try, because there's problem. There's about 40-plus admissions. I mean, 40-plus percent of the admission are older. Mm-hmm. And the level of care, which is 3 and 4, which is also about 40-plus percent of the older people in that level. So I think priority is to set up proper units that look into older people. But it's not so easy, because the wards are already in place. To change it to elderly friendly means you have to cut the amount of beds to be lower, so that you have the space to do things properly and so on. So it's going to be a lot of struggle, but that's one of the priority. Of course, the other very important priority, which I've been, one of the recommendations which I've been pushing is the Older Person Act, you know, that will encompass everything. I'm keen that the people look into, especially my demented persons, you know, without the capacity to make decision, they may say wrong things and do wrong things, and sometimes they may be cheated of their property, their assets, and they are exploited in some way, because you have nothing to protect them, you know. We do have a Power of Attorney Act 1949, but that's on property, not on older people making decisions, you know. The Mental Health Capacity Act look in the capacity in other way. They don't really look at these people who are demented, who cannot make decisions, you know. For instance, when I'm going to say I don't have much time to live, I make a will and say that you don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, you know, don't ventilate me, don't put me in a machine. But a lot of times this is not followed, because you don't have special sort of act to look into this aspect. And of course, some people who are demented, they may commit small petty crime because of their dementia. They don't know what's going on. They pass urine here, or, you know, and all this inappropriate behavior may be considered a crime, but there's nothing there to. Child Act have 60 plus pages that look at every aspect. It comes out because of the child abuse a long time ago. But in older people, there's nothing. So I think this is a priority which I've been highlighting. When this this, what do you call that, survey detail come in, me, my colleagues were involved in writing some recommendations. So this one thing we really put in. And everywhere I go, I stress on the importance. It takes a very long time to get an act in a parliament. Yes. Once it's in, you have regulation. We take a few more years, you know. That's what happened when many years ago I was talking about nursing homes. They were not well run. I stick my neck out like a cat, you know, in front of all dogs staring at me, telling them what is wrong with it. And after 10 plus years, we have an act for the aged care home, yeah. You know. So, but the regulation on how is it, is only starting this year. But yeah. It's very good. The Malaysian quality, MSQH, is taking up that and saying that with that standard, even before the regulation is up. So I think all of us have to really look into the welfare of older people.
Mm.
Because our society, to measure how good a country or how cultured a country or society is, how good we take care of our older people, how we really, you know, remember our gratitude to them. Because of not because of them, we wouldn't be here. So that gratitude, that caring towards them who have contributed is very important. Yeah, yes, they may be using some of our funding, you know, but the reality is that society, that caring society must start from all of us.
Dr. Rajini, it really comes down to a change in mindset mm-hmm. and the way our society looks at the idea of aging, don't you think? What kind of mindset change do you think we need?
Okay. So, as I mentioned just now, one of the recommendations was for older persons to feel that they are a part of society holistically. So, sometimes we tend to stigmatize aging as something that is negative. Okay, we want people to see aging as a bonus. Okay, you've lived this many years of life. So, that is a plus point. So, we want to add life to years, not just years to life. That is the goal of successful aging. So we want to see elderly as a potential asset and not as a burden. Okay, they are there for us. They are our informal social support. Okay, just now we talked about employment. So we can also look into ways that they can be productive to society, to be made to feel a valuable and integral part of our society.
Mm, okay. And Dr. Yao, what are your thoughts on this mindset change? I think that's going to be a bigger battle to tackle.
This is the most difficult aspect which I deal with every day. You know, yesterday, one patient was referred, seen by my geriatrician and others. They were referred for poor memory. But actually, a patient can tell you everything what is going on. It's just that he says, I don't feel good, I'm worried, I have no hope, and so on and so forth. Actually, patient is depressed in some way, but not so severe. So whenever I talk to him, he will say, you have children, you have grandchildren, show me the picture of the grandchildren, they're really lovely, daughters, and so on. But why can't you stay with them? Why do you want to stay alone? I don't want to be a burden to them. That word comes up regularly that, if I go to my children, I'm going to burden them. So this mindset that, you know, not only this patient, even my mom say the same and a lot of other people. You see, I will tell them, look, when I was a kid, you do everything for me. You will pawn this, you will keep this for me to get my education. But now, when I'm ready to take care of you, you say, I don't need burden, you don't, I don't. That mindset has been going on because the way the society has been evolving. So I think there's a lot of role of media and so on and so forth, including us, to actually put all these positive aspects of, as Ranjini mentioned about that, they still use who culturally, they can actually, instead of my kids being, knowing what's what Chinese is through the YouTube, it'd be good that my mom teach them what they've gone through and so on and so forth. You know? So there's a lot of things we need to hype up or change that the older people can contribute. They are still quite good. Of course, they must be positive themselves. Tun M is, you know, people say he's quite stubborn. No, actually, he's very determined. You know, he's very focused. You know, you can never change it. You know? So a lot of older people are that. You know, but we tend to say, this old person is very determined. Or this person is too negative. You know? So that positive aspect is a must for us to keep, improving on. So that the older people feel. You go to other countries, you go to Sweden, the whole Stockholm, you know, many different islands, and they are interconnected because the queen is very pro older people. she will make sure that their welfare are taken care. And on the street, you see them with walking stick, I mean, with walker going around and sitting down, having coffee, reading newspaper, everywhere, not just, you know. So that type of paradigm change in our thinking of the older people is very important.
Mm. Mm. Dr. Rajini, do you have a final message with regard to elderly health?
Okay, I think our vision is for older persons to achieve successful aging and age in place. When I say age in place, to be in their own homes, to enjoy the same quality of life they always have. So for this, to have continuing satisfaction in life, continued participation within the community, the importance of social networks and quality of life are all very important. We want to avoid institutionalization. We want to avoid just before institutionalization, maybe hospitalization. So getting them to realize this early and to work on their own health proactively is definitely something that we aim to achieve for. And the findings for the NHMS 2018 Elderly Health are actually available on our website, www.iku.gov.my. We have the technical reports, the fact sheets that summarizes it, and a very lay person-friendly infographic brochure to describe our findings in detail.
And Dr. Yao, do you have a final message, especially with regard to these findings?
Yes, this, I'm very happy that this comes out. No, the summary, I mean, the findings are all in what we are working and aiming for. So, of course, from whatever findings, I do hope that it can evolve to further research into more detail. For instance, dementia can go more detail into the different types, the different aspects of the behavior, the different care burden and different ways we can look in how we can improve. Huh? Or for instance, the fall, you know, how, what where are they and what are the problems, what are the complications? Can we do something about improving? I mean, she talks about having an act so that all homes should be elderly friendly so that you don't get injuries, don't get falls. So from this survey, it means that there are burden which we have been thinking about. And of course, we need to move forward and to do much more to improve on the current burden that we have.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Rajini Suryanarayana, Public Health Specialist from Institute of for Public Health, and Dr. Yao Wing Kyong, National Head of Geriatric Services. They're from the Ministry of Health, and we've been discussing the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2018 on elderly health. You've been listening to Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.